Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Michael Sussman, the Clinton campaign lawyer who was the target of the Durham investigation. Basically, they were hinging their entire investigation on Durham, has been acquitted by a jury after just 6 hours of deliberation, and Republicans have lost their minds. We're going to tell you why that's happening. We'll also speak with Jordan Cheriton from Status Quo News about the multiple failures and, of course, the lies that have come out of the Uvalde Police Department, who, by the way, have decided they're no longer going to be cooperating in further investigations. And more leaks this week, all pertaining, of course, to the Republican Party and what exactly they are planning to do in both the midterms and once they get power. All that and more is coming up. And don't forget, you can get the full show every single week. Go to rofpodcast.com, sign up to become a member. And if you want Ring of Fire every single day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So I wanted to kick things off this week. Obviously, we got to talk about the Sussman verdict. Not guilty. He has been acquitted by a jury that deliberated for 6 hours, spread out over 2 days, to come back with that devastating ruling for every Republican that has been pushing this for many years now. So let's back it all up to the beginning. What is going on is that you have John Durham, who, of course, is the special prosecutor who is looking into the origins of the Russia probe. He has been going at it for a little over 3 years now. 3 years! And so far has only secured one conviction of an FBI agent who basically admitted to changing an email. Yeah, that's the only conviction we have out of this whole thing. And, of course, Michael Sussman, right? The Clinton campaign lawyer who was indicted last year. And it was a big deal when he was indicted because the reports that came out and Durham's, press conference when he spoke out about this, they told us that the indictment was based on something other than what it actually was. Now, here's where things start to get really interesting. They told us that Sussman was indicted for lying to the FBI about his clients. That's not what Sussman was indicted for. But that is what they told us. You go back and you look at those media reports. You look at what Durham told us. They said he lied to the FBI about who he was representing, which, of course, is a complete misrepresentation of the facts. Sussman was, in fact, indicted for allegedly lying about why he went to the FBI. Was it on behalf of a client or was it not? It wasn't about who he was representing, which of course was the Clinton campaign and he had plenty of other clients. But they asked him, are you here? Are you here for us on behalf of a client? And he said no. Well, Durham says, ha, you're lying, bastard. So they indict him. So they go through this big trial. And during the trial, of course, members of the Clinton campaign were called to testify. They admitted, by the way, that they knew, and this was, some people on the left don't like to hear this, but they admitted, the Clinton campaign admitted that they knew their reports about a back channel between the Trump campaign and a bank in Russia couldn't stand up to scrutiny. Basically, they had no real hard evidence to support the link. So what they did, again, this is according to them in their sworn testimony in court, they gave it to the media. And they said, hey, media, how about you look into this? See if you can verify this, report the story. You're going to help us out. And yeah, that's how campaigns work, right? And then Sussman did something else, though. Sussman took the information to the FBI. And that's, of course, where he got into this alleged trouble. Because, like I said, they asked him, are you here on behalf of a client? Basically, did the Clinton campaign tell you to come here and give this to us to start an investigation? Sussman says, no, they absolutely did not. And all the Clinton people who, of course, testified also said, yeah, nobody told Sussman to do this. We didn't want him to do this. Because, again, we knew that we couldn't prove the link yet. So without that, we didn't want him to go talking. We didn't want him blabbing. We didn't tell him to go. And Durham's people could not, of course, come up with any evidence to support their claims that Sussman went there on behalf of Hillary Clinton. So, jury looks at all this, says, you didn't prove your case. So they acquit. So it's over. But not the investigation, of course. No, the Durham investigation is actually still going on. It's not over. Sussman's role clearly is, and like I mentioned, Republicans are furious. Donald Trump sent out an angry statement on his Truth Social, which, for the record, he is now legally obligated to start using, which is very funny. Trump Jr. put out an angry statement. Roger Stone came out and said he's going to start suing people. He didn't say who, what, or why, but he said he's going to start suing them in Florida, you know, because he's mad. So, you know, that's a thing to be on the lookout for. But all of this gets to the main point. And by the way, Heather Digby Parton wrote a phenomenal piece in Salon this week that I encourage everybody to check out. But the Durham investigation has been a flop. Like I said, you got one guy that admitted, okay, I changed an email. I'm with the FBI. I changed an email. Sure, I'm guilty. Oh, such horrible things. But Durham wasn't selected to, you know, find people committing menial crimes, which, for the record, even if Sussman had lied to the FBI, that wouldn't have changed the facts of the initial Russia investigation. And that's what people have to remember. The FBI had already come out a couple years ago, actually, issued a report that said, we have investigated the origins of this probe and we've determined that we took the appropriate steps. The investigation was, in fact, warranted. But nevertheless, Trump, Bill Barr, who was his attorney general, appointed Durham, said, find out the truth. And he's found out nothing. He hasn't been able to prove anything. He's gotten a couple people, well, actually just one person, because Sussman was acquitted, gotten one dude for lying. That's it. Nothing about the actual origins of the probe have been called into question with this more than 3-year investigation from Durham. It has, in fact, been a complete flop, and the Sussman acquittal this week proves it. Now, I'll admit, by the way, that when they announced this investigation, my opinion of it was, I don't care. You know, it's not going to hurt anybody to launch an investigation where you know there was no crime committed, right? It's going to be annoying for people, sure. But if you want to investigate something that didn't actually happen, be my guest, right? All it's going to do is end up clearing the people you're trying to investigate. It's actually a good thing. But at this point, I think it's time to wrap it up. Durham has proved, after 3 years of not being able to prove anything, that there's nothing to prove. It's over. It needs to end. All this is doing right now for Republicans is making you guys look worse. It's making Trump look worse, and it's making the Clinton campaign actually look kind of better. Is that really what y'all want? Because it is 100% what you are doing. And if that's your goal, then I suggest you keep paying Durham to do this. Otherwise, y'all probably want to wrap this up pretty soon, because you're all looking pretty darn foolish right about now. Last week's school shooting in Texas is still on everybody's minds, even as we have had more than 20 mass shootings in this country since the Robb school shooting. But one of the things that stands out about what happened in Texas is the police officers. Conflicting stories, lies, failure to act, and now, of course, refusing to cooperate with any further investigations. Joining me now to talk about this absolutely disgusting failure from these police officers is Jordan Cheriton from Status Quo News. Jordan, I think obviously the shooting is horrific enough, but in the week and a half, really, since this has happened, what's really emerged as even, you know, more disgusting is what we have seen from these cops. So let's start at the beginning. Let's start the day of the shooting. What happened with these Uvalde police officers there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of conflicting reports, but a key thing is they were there in the school, 19 officers, pretty quickly, within a few minutes of this madman, you know, barricading himself into this classroom. But after the initial gun exchange and bullets flying, where two of the officers were grazed with bullets, they essentially backed down on the orders of the commanding officer there, who just happens to now have quietly been appointed to the city council. He was elected to the city council before the shooting. What really becomes interesting, and there's been contradicting statements by the Texas Department of Public Safety, is when Border Control showed up, Border Patrol showed up, because Border Patrol has specialty equipment that they claim they were waiting on to try and get through that locked door. The original statement by the Texas Public Safety said that Border Patrol was part of the 19 officers that initially went in, which doesn't make sense, because in another statement, they were saying they were waiting on Border Patrol, but didn't show up till 12:15. The shooter first locked himself in there around 11:30. So if Border Patrol was there in the beginning with the original 19 officers that went in, really doesn't make a lot of sense why they didn't try to ram through that door right away, or at least start shooting at that door, because Border Patrol certainly had specialty equipment that could have helped them try to get through that door. It seems to me, and there's a lot of rumors going on, that essentially the commanding officer assumed that, you know, we don't hear anything, so it's no longer an urgent threat. Now we could try and negotiate with the shooter, even though not hearing gunshots doesn't mean that at that very moment, kids might have been bleeding out and there was time to, if you got in there right away, maybe some lives could have been saved.
And another interesting thing to me, obviously, is we had last week, they did this press conference a couple of days after the shooting. It was one of many that they did. And they said, well, here's the thing. A teacher had left one of their side doors cracked open. And obviously this is the problem. You know, this teacher, this careless teacher, has left a door open. So clearly that's the problem. And then a couple of days ago, they came out and they said, you know what? That didn't exactly happen. We were wrong, but they were shifting the blame, trying to say, hey, don't focus on us. Look over here at the teacher. And then of course, sheepishly admit, well, not exactly true what we had said. So we have had just so many conflicting reports, so many corrections from these police officers that it is really difficult to try to weed through and know what is real and what is not. Obviously, what we kind of have to rely on is all of these other witnesses, the parents that were out there with the police officers. And those accounts are terrifying. The account of the student, the little girl in the school, saying, you know, after the fact, when she learned that the cops were just outside, not coming in, just horrified by that knowledge. So the witnesses are the ones that we have to kind of rely on right now, because we can't really trust anything coming out of this police department.
And also accounts from parents that refused to wait and snuck into the other side of the school to get their kids out that were not in the locked classroom. And parents that said that they were handcuffed by these by police standing outside, saying that the police handcuffed them because they were, quote, impeding an investigation, meaning they were desperate to get their kids out of there. So, yeah, no, the police, I mean, the benefit of the doubt is gross incompetence, poor training. The probably more accurate statement is potentially in the beginning stages, they had messed up, or they, you know, possibly they did something wrong in the first minutes of this. And as a result, the commanding officer was more hesitant and played it, you know, in a deadly way, more conservatively to wait. And you know, there were reports that maybe they were trying to reach the gunman to try and kind of negotiate with him, that kind of thing. But overall, there's no question that there were kids calling 911 begging for the police to come in as the police were standing outside waiting. So it remains to be seen how many kids could have been saved at that point. It should also be added, because obviously a lot of focus is on the police here, but the shooter fired 100 rounds in the first couple minutes. So even if the police did everything right, which obviously they didn't, it's very likely that a large percentage of the 19 children and two teachers that were tragically murdered had been initially shot in those first few minutes. We don't know if, you know, how many instantly died or how many, you know, bled out. But I think the media is very focused, rightly, on the police missteps. But let's not forget, he can't fire 100 rounds with, like, you know, a handgun. I mean, this was an AR-15. He had purchased 375 rounds, high capacity magazines, all that. So the gun is what led to the majority of these deaths. Obviously, the police missteps probably also caused several more people to die that could have been saved.
Well, you know, that is also something definitely have to point out, too. And he waited till his 18th birthday when he's legally allowed to purchase these things. So there was no ill-gotten guns. And the group, you know, that sells these weapons says, hey, if you can't pay, don't worry, we can finance you. You know, like you're going and buying a car or buying a house. Just make these small monthly payments and you too can have your weapon of war here on the streets of the United States to do whatever the hell with you want to do. So that is 100% the biggest problem here. And if we don't solve that, it doesn't matter how well-trained or brave a police force is, you're still going to end up with these tragic shootings. I mean, we have seen, like I said, we've had more than 20 now since last Tuesday. This problem is clearly escalating. Prior to this elementary school shooting, we were averaging, 10 per week here in the United States just this year. That has grown exponentially in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And what's the Senate doing? Well, the Senate's on recess. You know, they wanted to take their week off for Memorial Day. You know, we've got to send out our tweets supporting the troops, you know, the fallen soldiers. And then, of course, we got to get to the barbecues. We got to get to the fundraisers. We got to do all of this fun stuff while mass shootings are just happening left and right. You know, Tulsa obviously being one of the big ones that also happened this week. And it's guns. That's the only common denominator in every mass shooting is the guns. Some, of course, motivated by racism. Some, of course, motivated by just, you know, people with severe hatred. But at the end of the day, it always comes down to the guns. That is the only common theme throughout all of these.
And by the way, when the Tulsa shooting was happening, there was also a shooting at a medical school in Dayton, Ohio at the same time, at an LA high school. They just got overshadowed because there were less deaths or less people shot. So there were about three shootings at the same time yesterday as the Tulsa shooting that killed four was reported. I should also point out, because I want to circle back to it, I mentioned that they thought they were trying to get a negotiator. They were desperately trying to get the gunman on the phone to negotiate, kind of like a hostage situation, which is completely backwards. Not that I'm, you know, a hostage negotiator specialist, but usually you're trying to negotiate with a suspect before they do something drastic, like shoot and kill people. But CNN reported this morning, this is from the mayor of Uvalde, that they were trying to get the government on the phone. Hostage negotiators were trying to get the government on the phone. So make no mistake, this was a epic police, you know, incompetence or worse, that when it's all said and done, who knows if there's an exact way to know how many more kids died because of the police waiting. But it really goes to show you, you know, we have this fetish with police in this country that they could do no wrong. Let's give them more money as they continue to brutalize, you know, unarmed black men and, you know, many other misdeeds. But the police are not infallible. A lot of them are poorly trained. And as one lieutenant said on CNN, part of their thinking was they could have been shot if they would have went in there. So they don't seem to be that worried about, you know, shoot first, think after when it comes to unarmed black people, when it comes to attacking, you know, poor people who jump the turnstiles in New York City subways. But when there's like you know, threat on their real threat on their lives from an AR-15, a lot of these police officers hesitate. You know, it is the human reaction. I wouldn't want to go in personally, right. But I'm not a cop. So I'm not, you know, not relitigating defund the police, but, you know, this throwing more money at police when there are other examples of police taking great measures not to endanger themselves so that they could get home.
Well, and 40% of the city budget of Uvalde goes to that police department. And when we're talking about all this money going to police, it's not going to police to train them. You know, we're not having them go to, you know, all of these training courses. They're not having to go through firearm training at all. This money is going to buy drones in some cases, you know, when they're not getting the surplus drones from the U.S. military. It's going to buy their fancy new cars with all of these fancy new features where the lights are hidden and they pop out from the bed of trucks. That's what we have in my city. It's ridiculous, but it's going to buy them fancy new toys. It is not going to make them better police officers. They're getting new toys. They're getting new police stations. You know, they're buying the fancy espresso machines, but it's not actually helping them be better police officers to actually serve and protect the community. And just to kind of also hit on what you said, like, yeah, if there was a shooting somewhere, I wouldn't want to run in, which is why I didn't choose a career where I would have to run into a situation like that. That doesn't make me a coward. I'm trying to protect myself. My kids were in there, probably different story, but I'm not going to run into gunfire. I work in an office and I chose that because I don't want to run into gunfire, among many other things. But when you sign up to be a police officer, it sucks that you have to do that. And we're actually trying to make it to where you shouldn't have to do that. But you sign up for that. Whether you want it or not, you've signed up for it. And the budget needs to reflect training so that they can do these things without, you know, fearing for their lives. That's where the money should be going.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, there could be a lot of different discussions, you know, mental health and all these things. But the bottom line is most other countries, if anything like this happens one time, not only does the media cover it for weeks, if not months, not move on in a few days. I mean, remember before this happened in Uvalde, the Buffalo mass shooting had already left the airwaves. They weren't even talking about it anymore. And, you know, 10 black people overall, 13 people got killed by a white supremacist. That was out of the news cycle. And this will be out of the news cycle in a few days anyway. So in a sane society, if your children are being mass slaughtered after Newtown, we're talking a decade ago, something radical would have been done. And nothing's going to be done. Yes, because of Republicans, but also, frankly, you know, we were told that Joe Biden was the pragmatic choice. MSNBC, CNN, they fed us during the primaries that you got to vote for Joe Biden. He's the one who could get things done. He's throwing up his arms and saying he can't do anything. There is something he could do. He can use the bully pulpit of the presidency right this minute. If he wasn't considering politics, if he wasn't considering November, to go on a public crusade against Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, to end the filibuster, to ban assault rifles, high capacity magazines, and other, gun control measures, and let the chips fall where they fall. Would Manchin and Sinema still obstruct? Maybe, but they haven't really experienced actual pressure. They haven't experienced the president using his bullet. I mean, Biden's giving a speech tonight on guns, guarantee you. He's not going to do what I'm saying. So Biden, whether it worked or not, could fight. Obama could have done this after Newtown. They don't have unilateral power to ban assault rifles, but they certainly could be using the power of the presidency to fight for it. Because, I mean, the negotiations right now between Democrats and Republicans, if something happens in a bipartisan measure, it's not going to address the problem. And we also should mention, I mean, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, lowered the age from 21 to 18. So this specific shooting happened in large part because this governor from Texas, who, by the way, in 2015 tweeted out, you know, comical tweets about, hey, Texas, you know, get your stuff together. California has passed us in gun sales. You know, we gotta catch up here. He fought to change the law so an 18-year-old could buy an AR-15 on his 18th birthday. I don't really see a lot of media pressure or shaming on the Texas governor either. So there's a lot of blame to go around. Obviously, Republicans are, you know, the gun fanatics here. But Democrats, in my view, could be doing more, because we could talk about the police and we should. We could talk about mental health. But you know what? Mentally ill people can't kill 19 children with nunchucks.
Well, and you know what's interesting too is when you're talking about Biden, and we know he can't unilaterally act, and that's the response you get from a lot of folks, you know, on social media or any kind of critics whenever you criticize Biden. Like, how dare you criticize this man? He can't do this. It has to go through Congress. Yeah, but there are things he can do. And I love how you point out the bully pulpit. That's something we talk about all the time, because at any point, on any whim, Biden can just say, hey, you know what, guys, call in the press right now. I think I have something I want to say. They will come running. The networks will send their cameras. They will cut away from, you know, the Price is Right to cover whatever it is this man wants to say. So do it. I mean, that it truly is that simple. Just do it. Do it every day. Do it to where the public is tired of hearing you call these people out for doing nothing. But that is what has to happen. You're the president of the United States. You can't unilaterally change the laws, but you can change the public's perception of the people who are doing nothing. And that's what you have to do. And if you're not willing to do that, get out of there, because this is your job. We have seen, obviously, it's been decades and decades, long before you and I were on this planet. We had presidents that used to do that. We had presidents that used to drive around to factories to call them out for not complying, for not keeping their workers safe. Man, imagine if we had anybody willing to do that today. I mean, what a different country we may live in if we had presidents that still had that courage, that still had that conviction, that still had the empathy for the people that put them in office. That would be phenomenal, but we just don't have it. Doesn't exist.
Hey. JFK went to war with U.S. Steel when they were price gouging and increasing their prices, and they buckled. You look at Lyndon B. Johnson, don't love everything he did, particularly Vietnam. He would threaten to take senators out by the knees. Sure, he had a much bigger, you know, he had a bigger margin than a 50-50 Senate, but he was, you know, a street brawler, and he threatened, you know, people even in his own party if he had to get his way. And Trump, to a much lesser degree, I mean, he would go at Republicans, I mean, just by tweet, go against Republicans, and they'd buckle. Obviously, Trump going, you know, what he was pushing for, probably wouldn't agree with, but he wasn't afraid to use the bully pulpit on Twitter and other methods. So Biden, you know, at the end of the day, whatever the reason, whether it's donors or still living in the year 1985, he lives in this civility politics age. Well, you know what? Parents don't give a damn about civility. They want their kids to be safe. And right now they're not. You know what's increasing? Not just gun sales. Bulletproof backpacks are increasing in sales after these gun shootings. So that's the country we were living in. And, you know, the president, I think a lot of voters, even if he can't actually do anything, they would really respond if he fought. In Arizona right now, Kyrsten Sinema is not polling that well. In West Virginia, Joe Manchin is not as popular as the media makes him out to be. In fact, people have turned on Joe Manchin because he blocked Build Back Better. So you have an open opportunity to challenge these two to end the filibuster. And the truth is, the reason they don't want to end the filibuster is because the donors don't want the filibuster removed, because the donors like the status quo, and the donors like bipartisan compromise, which usually when you hear bipartisan compromise, it's, you know, changing the side dishes on a meal and never tinkering with the main meal. So that's where we're at. But if 19 kids getting killed isn't going to do anything, let's not forget the Vegas shooting, nearly 60 killed a couple of years ago, El Paso. I fear, you know, we're just going to keep repeating the same cycle.
And what's really sad, too, is the fact that most of these gun control issues, I mean, I think four or five of them at least, poll into the 80th percentile. Majority of people say, yes, We want the red flag laws. Yes, we want the raising the age to 21. Yes, we want, you know, gun control. We want the federal registry. We want these things. More than 80% in most instances support these things. The only place where there is actually this division is in legislatures, both the state and the federal level. That's the only place where these arguments actually exist. Even among NRA members, more than 70% of them support these stricter gun control measures. So this truly isn't a bipartisan issue. It is majority of people, left, right, and center, say, please, for the love of God, protect us. And elected officials at the state and federal levels are just saying, well, we've got a compromise. The public doesn't want compromise. Public right. just says, get this done now.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting about that? It should be pointed out. Democrats like to cite majority will for issues like this, you know, 90% universal background checks. For some reason, that goes out the window with Medicare for All and a Green New Deal, which has majority support. I just find that interesting. Of course, you should be citing that 90% want background checks. Now you're close to 60% that want restrictions on high capacity magazines and things like that. Majority now supporting an assault rifle ban. But for whatever reason, if 70% want, you know, government health care, that's actually too radical. So they seem to be using the majority will when it suits them.
Yeah, it is very selective. I mean, look, not just on the gun control issue either. A majority of people, including Republicans, want action on climate change. They want debt forgiveness for student loans. They want debt-free college altogether, you know, Medicare for all, Build Back Better. I mean, just every issue this country truly, when you divorce it from a political party, because the polling actually does go down if you say it's a Democrat plan or Republican plan, but you divorce it from a political party, this country is pretty damn progressive. And they don't even realize it, I think, in most instances. But the things they like, the things they want, hugely progressive. But yeah, all those just kind of get ignored because we've got minority rule in Washington, D.C. So yeah, we get the shaft. Everybody else is screwed over on these issues while they take their donor money. They go out to these fancy dinners with their lobbyists. They have their closed door fundraisers. They don't care because they're being paid to not care.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, I'm not a parent yet. I know you are, but I got to tell you, the president's top responsibility is national security. I don't really understand why national security, that the top one of that should be our children. I mean, you don't have a country if you don't have a future. And it seems that we're very focused on national security for non-existent threats around the world. But with this, we throw up our hands. And, you know, this is not a 50-50 situation. Make no mistake, Republicans are predominantly at fault here because I don't even think it's just the NRA money. I think they like guns as a tool to get their base in a frenzy, distract their base from, you know, the economic machete Republicans have taken to their base over the last 40 years. It's a great culture issue and, you know, great for fear mongering. But at the end of the day, it's a scary situation when not just kids, but anyone, you just don't know. You do not know if today will be your last day. I mean, earlier I read a story, I think it was in South Carolina, that a family was on vacation and an 8-year-old died because somebody was randomly driving around shooting at people. Yeah. I mean, this is in South Carolina. So, you know, we're all humans. So generally, a lot of times we don't call for change unless something directly affects us. But this can directly impact anyone. And it's a scary situation, whether it's for your children or anyone, because just going to the grocery store, concerts, schools, this isn't going to change unless people really get fed up and protest, not just by voting, but, you know, start protesting and not leaving until something changes.
Absolutely. Jordan, before you go, I got to ask, I always ask you this because you've always got something cooking in the back burner. So what is status quo up to? I've seen some tweets, you know, you talk about ideas. So what does status quo have in store for us on the horizon?
Yeah, right now I'm working on two things. So number one, we're actually working on possibly a reporting trip to focus on organizing, which is not a sexy word, but there's a lot of it going on right now, whether it be workers through strikes, union drives, also tenant tenant unions right now that are successfully fighting in many parts of the city, including L.A., even Portland, Maine. I just spoke with someone to stop evictions. Rent is going up 30 to 40% all around the country, including in Florida, which the media doesn't seem to care about. So right now I'm plotting out maybe to take a trip to focus on workers, you know, just normal citizens fighting back through organizing, which, you know, if D.C. is going to continue to be a perennial, you know, gridlock, people are going to have to take it in their own hands at this point. So that's something we're planning on doing soon. I'm also working on another major Flint water investigation. People might not know, but the charges, which was only a misdemeanor, by the way, against the former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, sources I have, there's a good chance they'll be tossed, those charges against him and other state officials, due to the current Attorney General of Michigan and her prosecutors badly messing up this prosecution. So I'm working on another investigative piece on Flint. It recently passed 8 years of the Flint water crisis. The water is still not safe. Nobody has been convicted or has seen a prison cell. So as always, working on that, trying to keep that in the news. So yeah, that's what we're doing on top of our, you know, daily live streams, which are at 5 o'clock Eastern on Status Coup's YouTube page. You might not see it because YouTube won't notify you. So go subscribe to Status Coup, COUP, click the bell for all notifications. And, you know, if you want to support our on the ground reporting, you can become a member at statuscoup.com/join.
Jordan Cheriton, you guys do wonderful work with Status Coup. You're great. I love talking to you. So thank you for once again joining us here on Ring of Fire.
Thank you. Thanks for highlighting our work.
That's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show, go and sign up at rofpodcast.com. Become a member. It is a great way to not only support the show, but get access each week to the full show, plus exclusive access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archives. All the shows, all those old shows with Sam Cedar, if you want to go back and listen to those, go and sign up, rofpodcast.com.